and welcome to Dialect. I'm Tony Gosling. Welcome to Bristol's first podcast. Dialect goes out every Friday afternoon at 2 p.m. on BCFM. This week, Tim Rogers has come over the bridge to give us a possible explanation of some of the high levels of suicides in South Wales. Victims of miscarriages of justice are growing, in part due to the extinction of investigative TV documentaries such as the BBC's Rough Justice. But fear not, to the rescue comes Victims Unite website and editor Sabine McNeil. And we have the weekly What's On Guide and Song of the Week from Jeff Sparks. Dialect is produced by volunteers. If you want to join in, contact Volunteering Bristol, whose office is just off Queen's Square. Dialect recommends the volunteer-run Bristol Bully Watch helpline, almost entirely aimed at school children and parents. The number is 01454 318 753. And we'll have a reminder of the phone numbers for Volunteering Bristol and Bully Watch at the end of the show. So to start with, we're joined on the phone by Sabine McNeil from Victims Unite. Hi, Sabine, and welcome to Dialect.
Hi, Tony. Thank you. You've made my day by alluding to the gap between mainstream media and the online world, because that was the topic of our meeting at the House of Commons today.
Now, tell us about that. Straight hot off the press, you've been at the House of Commons talking about what I would suggest is massive gap between what we see on the mainstream national London television and what's going on in the real world.
Absolutely. Our topic was mind the gaps between the online and the mainstream media, but also between government and the public. But fortunately, we, as the Association of Mackenzie Friends, have got two remarkable MPs who sponsor us. One is John Hemming, who is supposedly not the only MP, as he said. He named a few others who are sympathetic to his cause, but he's certainly leading with his campaign Justice for Families. And the other one is Austin Mitchell, MP, who has been sponsoring the Forum for Stable Currencies, with which I started meetings at the House of Commons in 1998. And both of them really sang virtually of the same hymn sheet, even though we were in separate meetings. But it was most encouraging for us as victims of individual dramas, as well as those of us who've kind of clubbed together to raise the bar a little bit collectively.
Okay, so what was being discussed today? I mean, obviously, we know the general topic, but did you manage to look at any specific issues which the mainstream press, newspapers, television, radio from London isn't covering?
Well, the overall level is always victims of white-collar crimes, and I put together a pyramid of white-collar crimes in the way that I've discovered them as the observer over a number of years. It started with fraudulent bankruptcies, which sort of went on to home repossessions and false imprisonments, and moved on to child snatching as the most heinous of all crimes. And therefore, because John Hemming has so much experience with that aspect of white-collar crimes, and because Vicky Haig was on our panel, the family courts were discussed mainly, or got a certain priority in our first session, whereas in the afternoon we could talk more about the economic and financial aspect, because Austin Mitchell is very, very much up to speed with that understanding. Because ultimately, if you think about it, the cost to the taxpayers of the family system is enormous, and of the whole adversarial court system is also, if you like, just beyond anybody's rationale, let's say. So as the kinds of issues that got discussed are certainly victimization. I mean, at some stage, I actually would love to start a Maury poll, if we were funded, to find who is not a victim of the system in one shape or form or another. It is just so horrendous. I mean, if people hadn't said that it was a good day, I would have broken down, because there's just too much suffering that that you have to hear and listen to, Tony. It's whether it's the mother whose 5-year-old daughter has been adopted to Spain, which we need to challenge, because there is no reason for getting her adopted to Spain. The paper said she may have the right to be on holiday in Spain. Or the second daughter who was taken without any paperwork. I mean, just by brute force, 5 policemen. I mean, this is supposed to be, I don't know what, but it just isn't human.
I think one thing, Sabine, I mean, you know, my heart really goes out to you, because you are, one of the things you're doing is you are seeing the really raw end of some of the worst miscarriages of justice right across Britain, which doesn't necessarily reflect, you know, obviously if someone actually does get a bit of justice, they're not going to be coming to you. So, I mean, how do you cope with that on a personal level, seeing so many tales of injustice day after day?
Well, thank you for asking, because quite frankly, I had a hard time keeping myself together today, because it's just too much suffering over and over again. But one person on our panel was John Ward, and he used to look at the media as a market analyst anyway, and he's one of the most popular bloggers now. In fact, he calls it his website hat4uk.wordpress.com, but The Slog, and it was short for waging war on deception, distraction, and distortion.
But the word slog, I think, says it all in a lot of ways, because, you know, you really feel like maybe you're doing some sort of cross-country run. You're feeling very, very tired, and it never ends.
That's exactly right. It is one can of worms that opens after another. So first I thought it's the banks, then I thought it's the courts, then I thought it's the lawyers, then I discover it's prisons, then I discover it's social services. I mean, it is, honestly, I call myself an opener of cans, specializing in cans of worms. It's just disgusting.
I think one of the good things that's happened recently, though, is that much of the accusations against Jimmy Savile, which have been kept under wraps for decades by the BBC, and obviously the 2011 December decision by Newsnight, even after some of Savile's victims had bitten the bullet and gone on camera to be interviewed about the man, to then be told by the Newsnight editor Peter Rippon that actually they would never be shown those interviews. Of course they were subsequently on another programme. That this is actually a bit of a watershed moment, in that things are now being discussed over the last 3 or 4 months, that up until, you know, maybe until October 2012 would have been seen, people would have been told that they were lunatics. So another problem, of course, was up in Leeds. It's come out in the Daily Mirror just over the last week, Sabine, that Jimmy Savile was boasting that anyone that tried to make accusations against him, that he had friends in the police who would squash those accusations.
Yes, you see, in a way, I'm hoping we can ride what I call the Hillsborough and the Savile tide. And I was quite shocked. I mean, I've just put up the pyramid of white-collar crimes the way I've experienced it, where the tip of the child-snatching area is pedophilia and Satanism. And the Express, fortunately, published a page on the fact that Savile was part of a satanic ring over this Sunday.
That's right. And I mean, it was the Sunday Express, wasn't it?
Yes.
Had a very, very shocking front page this week, saying that Jimmy Savile was actually part of a satanic ring. Now, that, for a long time, for example, if you ever read Private Eye, they would completely deny that any such ritual abuse existed. Now, it's been proved by the Sunday Express, by 2 independent witnesses to what Savile was doing at Broadmoor, that actually that there was a very strong ritual abuse satanic aspect to what Savile was actually doing, and shockingly he was appointed to that job, that trusted job at Broadmoor, by the then Health Secretary Kenneth Clark, who up until recently was Justice Secretary, right this minute is sitting, unless he's sacked this week, in the cabinet, in right in the middle of government, Ken Clark and Edwina Curry appointed Saville to that job. I mean, it's pretty shocking to think that those people are now in power. But, I mean, is this idea of satanic abuse something that you've come across before and you found difficult to talk about personally and before the Sunday Express, you know, wrote it right across the nation this week?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, first of all, Kenneth Clark was the one to whom we exposed the first four worst bankruptcies we've come across, and we got nowhere. Vince Cable, in his position, was the second one. We tried to explain everybody the horribleness of bankruptcies. Then I discovered child snatching, and I discovered afterwards that the motivation is pedophilia. That pedophilia is apparently more or less synonymous with Satanism was suggested to me by supporters of the Holly Gregg campaign. Holly, if you remember, is a woman who has Down syndrome and therefore has a particularly sharp memory, and she remembers 22 abusers, and that in her, some of her abusers included people who practice these rituals. I mean, I haven't heard anybody myself mentioning it, but by the time the Express came along, I said, well, thank God I'm not alone, so to speak, but I am only going by what I've heard. From victims more or less themselves, and one of them is the daughter, one of the children of this Nigerian couple whom I've accompanied for a long time. And the daughter, the little girl, told her mum that she was taken to dark places where there are only men at night. Well, if that's supposed to be in the interest of the child, which social services claim to be the protection and the reason for ultimately imprisoning this couple, then excuse me, there is absolute madness at work. You can't call it anything else.
Now, satanic and ritual abuse aside, there were clearly many opportunities for the police to prosecute Saville. Any ideas why that never happened? I mean, someone that's been used to these kind of, you know, a whole plethora of different miscarriages of justice, Sabine?
Yes. The non-investigation by the police is part of the pattern. Because, you see, this is what is so sadly strange, that it doesn't matter whether it's bankruptcy or false imprisonment or NHS cover-up. The police doesn't investigate, full stop. That's why now there is a great rescuer on the horizon, David Gale from UKIP. He was going to become a police commissioner, and he happened to have been a constable himself. And he has published a press release called Kids for Cash Court Scandal. And as a consequence, he had 1,200 contacts, and he now wants to ask people to come forward if and when they did complain to the police and the police didn't investigate, because that's what happens and has happened over and over again. He also is asking for people to come forward and to swear an affidavit where lawyers advised them to accept false allegations, which is also what I've heard over and over again, especially in family courts, which are, of course, secret, which is one of the terrible things, which is why I've started this online petition against it, where there are terrific comments as well about it. But in a way, it so far, it seems it doesn't matter what we've done. We can't make a real difference yet, but hopefully, eventually, things will change.
Sabine, your website, victims-unite.net. I just wondered if you'd hang on for a couple of minutes, because we've got a guest in the studio that I think you know, and it'd be nice to have your input. So can you just hang on? Is that all right?
I'm certainly happy to hang on for
okay.
you, Tony.
In which case, time to introduce Tim Rogers. Now, Tim, you're from the other side of the river, aren't you?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about where you live and how you got into this sort of investigating some of the miscarriages of justice around you.
Yeah, well, in 1999, I moved into a place called Rudry Village, a lovely little rural village on the outskirts of Caerphilly, between Cardiff, Newport and Caerphilly. And within a couple of weeks, me and my wife were having nuisance from a facility known as Rudry Parish Hall next door to us.
Hang on, the parish hall?
Yes, a community centre.
Well, is that the noise, music or something?
Music initially. We went over to see the organisers, you know, cap in hand. We thought we've, you know, after we had this nuisance for a couple of months, we've come to what we believe is a nice area, and you know, we want to get on with you and you know, be part of the village and be accepted.
So how close is your house to the village hall?
Oh, 30 metres away. It's very, very rural, Rudrias. So anyway, after we went to this meeting, they treated us with absolute aggression. This wasn't from every member. There was obviously something going on in the background that was agitating these people. These people were being primed, you know, to cause agitation. So after a few more months, we were having repeated and escalating problems from there. And all of a sudden, people started to threaten me, threaten my children, and so on. I mean, the series of problems I've had over a period of almost 14 years now were absolutely horrific.
But I mean, isn't that, can you just put that down to a difference of opinion? I mean, if you're
no.
going around telling, say, for example, people who are practicing music in the village hall to be quiet, then, you know, isn't that just a sort of neighbourly dispute?
No, it wasn't a neighbourly dispute, Tony. It was wrapped up in this way. But in fact, what I later found out when I started to investigate about 18 months ago, that it was very professional, very well funded and organised. We had an individual in the village. He was going round to, when I had enough of things, and it's a very, very long story. I could talk about this for days, right? Because there was that many incidents. But he was going round to estate agents, telling them, "Oh, you can't sell this house next door to a noisy parish hall." The estate agent's lady called Sharon from Darlow, she said to me, "A very odd man come in and he was acting unusual," and so on, described him, and it was him. So, you know, he graffitied his own house. He spread vicious, malicious gossip about me. So anyway, the problems escalated after year after year, and what they were actually doing, they were using, if I can put this in a brief way, I don't want to go on about it because, like I said, I could talk about hours. But they were using what's known as Saul Alinsky Rules for Radicals, which is a community organising tool which relies entirely on scapegoating and causing conflict. And the way they deploy these techniques is they form groups, they get in the middle of those groups, the more people, the more power. If you read Saul Alinsky Rules for Radicals, it's on the internet, just put in Saul Alinsky, the full list. And you'll read them, but it's like I said, it's another.
Okay, that's spelled A L I N S K I. Saul Alinsky.
Yes, it's one thing reading these techniques, but it's another thing actually recognizing and understanding how they're deployed. So they form these groups, lots and lots of people, and they pick a target in the village. They get to know everybody in the village, so they wouldn't target Dai, who's been there for 20 years. It's very likely they'd. Pick on somebody who's already isolated or new to the village, which I was. So it was perfect. I wouldn't get any sympathy from anybody. So what he did, he started to spread malicious gossip. He deliberately went out of his way to agitate me with loud music, with anything he can. So if you can imagine, if your job is to absolutely agitate the living daylights out of somebody, most people would do a wonderful job. It's not that difficult, okay? This process went on for a very, very long time. They then changed community leaders. He went off to another area, and I do know that he's doing exactly the same over there. He's classed as a community change agent, okay? This is his title, this is what he does. He's trained in Alinsky activities. And like I said, the way it works is you agitate the target from a group environment, you spread lots and lots of gossip. So eventually, some people would become that incensed with the lies they've heard, they would even want to take the law into their own hands. And I can tell you, that happened to me more than several times. I had people came up to me with my young children, who were 6 and 7 at the time, 8, 9, and threatened me and wanted to fight me. And I'd never met these people. But of course, the lies and things he was saying were that bad that people were outraged by it.
But Tim, I mean, isn't this something that is almost going to happen in an area like South Wales where there is a lot of unemployment? I mean, there used to be a massive mining industry, yeah. For example. It's quite a depressed area, isn't it?
I'll cover that. It's not actually. Rudry is a very, very affluent area. We've got properties on there. The cheapest house there is probably 170,000 in the village to about 250. Then if you go a couple of hundred yards my way, so where we're living, properties start, derelict houses start, and I'm not joking, derelict, £500,000 up. We've got properties in Rudry worth £10-12 million, right? So that's the sort of area you're talking about. You're talking about a very affluent area. So that isn't the case. And I've had people saying to me as well, these sort of things happen, and this is how it's dressed up. It seems very, very natural and normal, but when you see the rate of the escalation of agitation and everything that comes with it, it's unbelievable.
Okay, we say goodbye to Sabine, I'd just like to bring you back in again, Sabine, if that's all right. Have you got any comments about what you've heard there from Tim?
Well, I'm very, very fascinated, Tony. A community change agent, that is kind of, to me now, the local version of what is called Common Purpose. Common Purpose seems to be the organization that indoctrinates the institutions. There are people who object to the amount of money that local authorities pay for our Common Purpose training. And maybe they are the ones who change these community change agents. But how absolutely horrific to undermine not just families, undermine and destroy families, but also communities. We have today observed how second generation child snatching is happening. So and that's what I've heard from women in Holloway as well, how most or many of them have been in care themselves, so they are just basically used to deliver, if you like, fodder for the pedophiles. And in my way of trying to make sense of what is happening is, what used to be fodder for wars is now fodder for pedophiles. But presumably what they have in common is the global elite, as lots and lots and lots of sites and videos suggest online, that the global elite is a satanic and pedophile one. And so it filters down to brainwashing, not only via the mainstream media, but also via infiltration into communities and families. It's absolutely horrifically shocking. And it doesn't, on some level, it doesn't surprise me, I'm afraid to say.
Okay, Sabine, thanks ever so much. Your website again is victimsunite.net. And before we go back and talk to Tim Rogers, let's have some music to lighten up the load a little bit.
Bless you. Thank you, Tony.
Thank you. having beauty like a mother to a son, like living, dying, seeing, being all rolled into one. And all at once I heard some music playing in my bones, the same old song I'd heard for years reminding me of home. But it's all right, Lady Eleanor. And beast desire, and when it seemed for certain that the screams could get no higher, I heard a voice above the rest screaming, "You're a liar." But it's all right, Lady Eleanor.
Farm with the Lady Eleanor, and with me is Tim Rogers. Now, Tim, can you tell us about the this network that you discovered in your village in Wales?
Okay, well, after being on the receiving end of some very unpleasant abuse for a very long time, and how these people scapegoated me and my family and my children, one of my children was put into hospital twice from having a baseball bat put across his face, from the professional vindictive rumours that was put around about me and my family, and he also had his trousers and pants taken off him in school. He has learning difficulties, and you know, it's practically, I mean, the issues have ruined our family life. So last year when they started on me again, their agitation skills, it became absolutely abundantly clear to me that these individuals were looking for a response because of the organising tool they rely on. It relies on a response from the target they're targeting.
So, I mean, you're saying basically they were looking for some kind of reaction, for some kind of... It was a provocation. But when you started looking into it, what network did you discover?
Right, OK, I've discovered common purpose networks. And these people work in secret. They work under the Chatham House rules, entirely in secret. And they've put these people very close to community centres, parish halls. They've got them in churches. They've put them in police stations. They've put them in very high positions in councils.
And how is it funded?
It's funded by silly old us. I believe last year Common Purpose had almost £100 million given to them from the taxpayer. They've got about, we hear different figures, 35,000 or 60,000 or 70,000. But I'm not convinced there's that many. I believe there's probably about 15 or 20,000 real nasty subversives. And of course, it doesn't mean that everybody who's initiated into Common Purpose are barred, but if they're not in the first place, they soon are after a couple of years, because they use proper Soviet-type brainwashing techniques on them. And I don't say this lightly. I've read the full material, the full psychological reports on exactly what they do to these people.
Now, you've had your own experience in Wales, but I mean, how would somebody, do you think, recognise one of these networks if it was going on nearby them, around them, in their own community?
Right, okay, well, that's fairly simple. These people have been put into community centres and parish halls, and what you'll find is there's some sort of disruption going on just under the surface of the community where somebody has been targeted. Somebody's a real problem. And this sounds very real. So these people will keep on banging on about one individual. He's a problem, he's this, he's that, he's the other. Now, there's all sorts of different tactics they use, and if you just sit back and think to yourself, well, if I was paid to agitate people and cause friction and cause and you know, make people respond, you know, anybody could do it. I mean, it's a real simple process. And of course, if you're paid to do it, I think these people are on like 400, 500, 600 quid a week. So they've got plenty of incentive there, and they won't put their hands up and say, oh, I'm doing terrible things, I've got a low lack of empathy and everything else, because they're paid, they're hanging on to their jobs. So what I would say is that if you've got trouble brewing, particularly from a community centre, the chances are that these techniques and these common purpose graduates are using their subversive skills there.
Now, when you initially spoke to me on the phone, Tim, you mentioned the Arab Spring, and I must admit, I find it difficult to see how this kind of network could be in any way linked to the Arab Spring and the uprisings in places like Egypt.
Well, I can actually categorically confirm to you that the Arab Springs were brought down by exactly the same agitators. They were running Chaos Pilots, and hundreds of other different charity names. These people are encouraged to open up lots of different names, lots of different quangos, so it's very difficult to pinpoint them down, and then very difficult to put the blame on the people who's doing it. Ultimately, the man behind it is George Soros, with his community networks. He was the one who says publicly, I made mistakes with the Balkans. If you look at the history on the Balkans, just print the search engine. I mean, we're talking about absolute horrific crimes against humanity, mass murders against Muslims, mass murders against Christians. You know, these people will work everybody against everybody. They'll work blacks against whites, particularly. Hang on, Tony. They'll work Muslims against Sikhs. They'll use Sikhs against Catholics and so on.
Well,
so
I wanted to interrupt you because the Interior Minister of Egypt is going through a trial at the moment, as well as Hosni Mubarak, the president. And as part of that trial, he is accused of planting himself, the Interior Ministry, planting bombs in the Coptic Christian Church in Alexandria with the specific purpose of then blaming it on Muslims to try and get the Coptic Christians and the Muslims fighting each other.
Well, this is how it all works. And I would stress to the Muslim community, particularly the Muslim community, you must learn these practices and turn it back on them. Turn it back on these people who's trying to bring down all the peaceful Islamic countries.
Well, I mean, one of the things to do, of course, is to just simply not be provoked. If someone's trying to provoke you, it's almost like someone's poking you, and you say, well, carry on poking me.
Well, it's human reaction, isn't it? And I'll just take you back to a few years ago where we had the Prophet Muhammad, a degrading depiction put out of him, a cartoon depiction. And, you know, there was riots all around the world. Now, this is absolutely classical, and I can guarantee you, if you look at the background of the man who put up those cartoons, I can almost promise you he would be of a particular origin, and he would be using these skills specifically for the Muslim community to react. And this is what they're doing. We've got our so-called government bombing. I mean, this is enough in itself. Bombing civilians in Islamic countries. They're taking these countries apart. And the Muslim community, as we would, the Christian community or the Catholic community, we'd all be enraged. But you cannot raise to the bait, because this is exactly what they're doing.
Now,
and of course,
the other side of all this, if I can just move you on, Tim, is that I know you certainly believe that that there may be some kind of crisis coming in Britain in the future, where you know, a little bit like the Arab Spring. Now, I can remember when the Civil Contingencies Act came in. I think it was around about 2004. 2004. That's actually a massive change in our civil defence. The civil defence structure, which was put in place after the Second World War, was very much about protecting civilians from a foreign attack. The Civil Contingencies Bill and what became the Civil Contingencies Act is quite different, isn't it?
Right. Well, if you have a look at just so you can see this for yourself, you know. Find a old insurance document, household insurance from say 03-04, and then have a look at your buildings and contents insurance now or a couple of years later, and you will be absolutely mortified. These people putting these insurance documents together, they paid millions to weigh up the risks and pros and cons. And I'll just tell you briefly, in 2004, my insurance company on the document under civil war, it didn't even say civil war, it was civil commotion covered. Three words. You have to look at in 2006, we got two full A4 pages of every single eventuality of civil war, army rising against the government with the police or without the police, and the government against the people, and this, that, and the other. It just goes on for two full A4 pages. Now, that civil contingency plan is a tool, and it was put in place by the expert Blair, if I can say that, and he is going to use this tool to enact a civil disruption. They're going to engineer it. They've got their people almost coming to a full circle. They're consolidating their positions, and when it's ready, they'll agitate in unison, and they'll be able to enact the civil contingency plan, which is one signature from our lovely David Cameron. People will get hurt. This will get violent. There's absolutely no doubt. I've studied this in great depth and great detail, and I know what's coming. These common purpose graduates need to be identified. They need to be arrested. They need to be tried, as much as many of our...
Hang on a minute. These are community organisers. They haven't necessarily done anything wrong under the law, have they? I mean, you may say that they are, you know, maybe causing problems, but, I mean, ultimately, legally, they haven't.
Well, you're actually wrong, Tony, and I don't mean that in the worst, you know, as an insult onto you, but they are criminals, and if you look at the Alinsky techniques... these techniques rely on a conspiracy to harass, on a conspiracy to terrorize, a conspiracy to provoke a reaction. Now, we've got laws against provocation, but if you don't understand that this is going on professionally, you will not be able to put it together.
That's fascinating, because, I mean, certainly harassment is a criminal offence, isn't it? I mean, ultimately, though, how long do you think... this is a rather worrying prospect, the idea that someone is actually sitting there behind the scenes planning for some kind of civil war. But how long do you think we've got until this happens? Any ideas?
Well, I read a parliamentary document going back, I think, about a month ago, and me and Brian Gerrish discussed it briefly on UK Column Live. And the parliamentary document was talking about a revolution. They were talking about Mao. They were talking about Lenin. They were talking about chaos. And they said this revolution will start from the countryside. Now, this is why we got people in key positions in very rural locations around Wales. And, of course, I do know for a fact that these are all over the country. They're in Bristol. They're in Swindon. They're in Bath. So, you know, they will have a controlled civil contingency plan in order. It will happen if this is not brought to book. I can assure you, I've done my studying. I know exactly what I'm talking about.
OK, so finally, Tim, whereabouts should people go online? Because obviously we're not going to get this on the BBC News to research it further.
OK, well, what I would say to you was first is have a look at Brian Gerrish's work, UK Column Live. He's extensively covered who Common Purpose is, what they are, what their motive is. And I would ask you to study that. I would ask you to learn the procedures of Saul Alinsky, Rules for Radicals, Rule 1 to 12. Just put in Google search engine, any search engine, Saul Alinsky, the full list. Have a read through those, and you'll be horrified. These are the practices, domestic terrorism, that's going on in our communities.
Quite frightening, Tim. Anyway, thanks ever so much for coming in and talking to us about this. I would just also like to say that that if anyone from Common Purpose is involved in any criminal activity, then, of course, that's for them to look out. But ultimately, Common Purpose, just being a member of Common Purpose, is absolutely not evidence in itself. So anyway, we're also now joined by Jason Yiannakopoulos. Jason, you've been looking
Hello.
At the Rosicrucians this
Rosicrucians,
week. What have you found out?
Now, Rosicrucians are an interesting group. They call themselves a sect of Christianity. The idea being they're a continuation of the Order of the Rosy Cross that existed in sort of Middle Age Germany. Now, these people are interesting because If you like, they're Christian spiritualists.
I think it wasn't is Blair a Rosicrucian? I can remember standing outside of a Masonic lodge in London, being filmed by a Russian camera crew, and some people, and it was the address of Tony Blair's lodge, apparently. I mean, at least if you believe one of these, it was a film about Blair saying he was a Freemason member of a specific lodge. And when these guys came in with some food, I said, "Well, I'll get out of the way if you tell me what this place is." And they said, "Oh, it's a Rosicrucian place."
Well, that's interesting because at a particular lodge which I looked at, I didn't come up with Tony Blair, but there are various different sects of Rosicrucians. And the thing about this is they are ridiculously secretive. So I was researching for beliefs of the Rosicrucians, and it was taking me all sorts of places, you know.
Okay, so what did you find out? Obviously difficult.
I found out one of the main things is that they believe in kind of like, one of their main beliefs is like a reinvention of humanity, if you will, through sort of like a spiritual thing which they believe in karma. They believe in things. They believe in ancient Egyptian mystique. Is mainly what I found out.
That doesn't sound very Christian. I mean, it's kind of the
This is what surprised me. At the Rosicrucian Park, which is in San Jose, they have a statue to the Pharaoh Akhenaten, and they have a whole Egyptian temple there. And I was like, for what was in the Middle Ages, a form of Christian enlightenment where they felt that you could find. They sort of felt you could find God within yourselves. But the reason I brought up the Rosicrucians is in 1980s they came up with some they put up this massive monument in a park in Georgia, and called the Georgia Guidestones. Now although they haven't claimed to do it, there's a lot of things, and I actually copied down the list of sort of 10 commandments.
Okay, go for the Rosicrucians' 10 commandments. Go for it.
It's it says population of humanity to be controlled around 5 million. So that, by the way, is a population reduction. I've calculated this of 92.37%.
Oh dear. So only 5 million people left on planet Earth. That's their objective. Gosh. Yeah.
That's number one. That's top of the
list.
I
don't think they're going to do that just by a little bit of tweaking with birth control, are they?
Well, it's interesting because second on that list is control reproduction wisely.
Okay.
They say so.
Next one.
Sort of eugenics. All people to be united under one new language. So that's all people speaking one language. It sounds a bit like.
Okay.
Number four is to control passion, faith, and tradition.
Well, that sounds like controlling history. Yeah, they sound a bit of a dodgy lot. What about number five?
Number five is another nice one. It says to instill fair courts, make sure that justice is fair. But if you're doing all that, I find it hard to see how justice can be fair in this situation.
Okay. Number six
is all internal any internal problem nations have has to be solved internally, but external problems should be solved in a world court.
Okay.
So that's a bit one world government there. Seven says no petty laws, no use in officials. But then again, any sect will say that. Eight says balance personal rights with social duties. I'm not entirely sure what it means by that, but I think that. But to me, that looks like the old sacrificing civil liberties for freedom argument.
Yeah.
Number nine, prize truth, beauty, and love, and seek harmony. And number ten, this is a really interesting one: don't be a cancer on the planet.
Well, I mean, from what you've said, it sounds to me like the Rosicrucians might be a cancer on the planet themselves.
No, it's weird because they don't claim to have done the Georgia Guidestones. But the reason a lot of people, including myself, believe that it is the Rosicrucians is the fact that the whole Rosicrucian belief is based on the words of a man who hasn't actually, who we don't even know ever existed, but an alchemist of all people, a German alchemist by the name of Christian Rosenkreutz, which is why Rosicrucian signed document CRC stands for Richard Christian Rosenkreutz. Now, on the Georgia Guidestones, it says that the author of these Guidestones is a Mr. R.C. Christian, and then it says underneath a pseudonym.
Yeah. my God, well, they sound like they're quite well funded, but anyway.
They are quite well funded because looking at past members have included Walt Disney. Gene Roddenberry, the man behind Star Trek, and Napoleon Bonaparte. And they also claim that Francis Bacon, Leonardo da Vinci, Michael Faraday, and Isaac Newton were also members.
And Uncle Tom Cobley and all. Okay, well, thanks ever so much for that, Jason. Now, Jeff Sparks. You're looking this week at a Pledge Music website. Tell us about that.
Thank you. Yeah, basically, Pledge Music is a hands-on, direct-to-the-fans website. When the artist wants to fund an album, tour, single, whatever project they have, they can go to Pledge Music and set up a project and then publicise it via their social networks. And that is when the fans come into it and they sign up to Pledge Music, check out what the projects the artist has got, then they can pledge for that project. The artist provides updates for those that pledge, and when it comes to pledging for that project, the artist can set different options for each pledge amount.
What are the various options then?
Well, let's look at Mad Hatter 2.0, for example. They're a groove metal band from Exeter. They're releasing their full-length studio album. Now, for a pledge of £8, you get the digital download and updates for the project. And for a pledge of £12, you get the digital download, updates, and the album on CD. And then there's other options they give as well. Another example is Bristol-based rockers Riot Noise. They're releasing their debut album. Now, with them, they have the £8 pledge of digital download and updates of the project. But the other options, for example, are for £12, you get the digital download, updates, album on CD, and a ticket to the album launch gig. And again, there's other options available.
So, which artists use the site?
Well, they got everyone from signed artists right through to unsigned artists. I mean, I looked on the site today and noticed Beach Boys. They've launched a project for the fans to pledge for their 50th anniversary world tour film. And Killing Joke, they're involved with a project called the Singles Collection. And CJ Ramone, of the Ramones fame, he's got involved with his new album. And of course, as I previously mentioned, you've got bands like Mad Hatter 2.0 and Riot Noise, which are both unsigned, and they've got involved with Pledge Music. But I've also noticed it's not limited to just artists. I've noticed that Move Music Festival this year, which is based in Albany, New York, they've set up a project in which people can pledge for early access and also discounted packages.
One thing I will say, though, Jeff, is that, I mean, in the old days, when I were a lad, you used to go to the record shop and then pay for the record once it had already been made. This sounds like you're paying for your record before it's even been made.
Well, yes, that's what it is. It's basically, you know, the band are basically saying to the fans, well, this is what we've got lined up. Over to you. Can you fund the album?
So, is there any artists that have had a really big success on the site?
Well, yeah, there has been one that comes to mind, a musician called Ginger Wildheart. And he set up a triple album project on the site and set a 60-day deadline to reach the 100% target. But within 6 hours, the fans reacted so greatly that the project went through that target and pushed it straight into the Pledge Music record books, and it became the fastest-growing campaign in Pledge Music history. Now, when that target reached 555%, and that became the name of the album, it was decided that the hard copies of the triple CD, triple vinyl and liner note packages were to be deleted forever, so anyone that pledged up to that point would have an even more exclusive album on their hands. And it was also decided to release an album of 12 tracks chosen for commercial release by the pledgers, and that was titled 100%. And it's also worth noting that at the Classic Rock Magazine Roll of Honour Awards of 2012, the triple album project was named Event of the Year. And of course, since that project of 555%, Ginger's gone on to launch other projects on Pledge Music, namely Hey Hello and also Mutation.
And the What's On Guide.
Yes, this is the What's On Guide from Dialect. Starting with Friday, 18th of January, Visions to Kill the Mainstream will be performing with support from Iridium, Alien Stash Tin and Give Me Memphis at Louisiana in Wapping Road, Bristol. Tickets are £4 in advance and doors open at 7:30 p.m. Also on 18th of January, Guns vs. Roses will be performing with support for Memories in Torment at the Tunnels in Bristol and Exeter Mews, Bristol. Tickets are £8 in advance and doors open at 7:30 p.m. On to Song of the Week, and I present Hey Hello. This project was formed by Ginger Wildheart and Victoria Ligety, and they released their self-titled debut album via PledgeMusic.com in December 2012. Here is a track from that album, and it's titled Swimwear.
Another Pledge Music track.
Was Hey Hello with Swimwear from their self-titled debut album, which was released in December 2012. And to pledge for that album, you need to do a search for Ginger Wild Heart on the www.pledgemusic.com. On to Saturday, 19th of January, No Warning Shot will be performing with support from Brotherhood of the Lake, True Valiant, Decimate, Somnus, Failure to Follow, Dogfight, Bats About Bats, HSC and Koshiro at the Fleece in St Thomas Street, Bristol. Tickets are £5 in advance and doors open at 4pm. Finally, on Sunday, 20th of January, Lizzie Dean will be performing at the Carnation Tap in Sion Place, Bristol. Entry is £4 on the door and the doors open at 4pm. That was all from me. Thanks for listening and have a good week. Take care and goodbye.
Thanks, Jeff. Well, apologies we didn't have time for Alan Frankovich. We had such a lot to talk about with Tim Rogers from Rudry. But that's all for this week. Dialect is a weekly podcast for your MP3 player, produced by volunteers, and goes out on BCFM every Friday, 5 to 7pm. You can find us on the internet at dialectradio.co.uk. Thanks to our studio guest Tim Rogers from Rudry Village over in Wales. Dialect is a Bristol Radio Co-op production and anyone can contribute. If you'd like to, do please contact us through Volunteering Bristol on 0117 989 7733. And you can find them on the web, bristolvolunteers.org.uk. As promised, here's the number again for Bristol Bully Watch Helpline. That's 01454 318 753. That was Dialect, and I'm Tony Gosling. Thanks to Jason Yannakopoulos, also Jeff Sparks. Wishing you all a very good week. Thanks for listening. Until the same time next week, or unless you hear the podcast or one of our previous podcasts online at dialect.co.uk. Goodbye for now.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? I've turned that up so loud I've nearly blown my stupid head off. Hold on a second. That's Aulus Mobile from the LP Stop Arrête from Jimmy's Productions. Indeed, it's the title track from it.